the ball in left field seats in Sportsman's Park, yes, which is 345 feet away.
Oh, my, oh, my, oh, it's about a thrill of a lifetime.
At a gate time, you know, when you're only 11 years old, hit a ball that hard. But it was Hank Byers' nephew is the one that did it.
Oh.
Hank's from East St. Louis, not from East St. Louis. He played with all my uncles, and then I played with his nephew. Even though we're, the two of us are probably, he's probably 8 or 9 years old.
Okay.
So. But anyway, when I came up to the big leagues for the first time, the pitching coach was Harry Rakeem of the ball club.
I'll be darned.
He was my roommate on the road at that time, and I really let him know about outside my baseball.
A friend of mine back in West got a story. He grew up in Brooklyn and of chasing Harry Burkeen all over into the subway to get his autograph, and he never was successful.
Yeah.
No, I guess Burkeen lost that day, so he probably wasn't too talkative.
Well, no, when you lose, you're not too excited about talking to anybody.
Yeah.
What can you say? I lost.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, what peculiarities of that ballpark do you remember?
Well, of course, the right field screen. And the fence was, what, 315 feet or something.
So it's a picture. You really remember that one?
I remember it very well. And it wasn't a lot of foul territory. If you get a lot of foul territory, then you're going to have a better ERA because guys hit pop flies
sure.
to catch them. And in Boston, the reason they hit so much, the averages are so high because the ballpark is so close. And they get second and third shots.
Yeah.
Foul balls go to stand.
Okay.
That's why they have, I would swear.
That's interesting.
That
yeah.
gives you about a 10 point better average. When you're Brooklyn was another one like that. Because Brooklyn had all great hitters there all the time. Same thing, sharp fence. Now, when they go to Los Angeles playing the Coliseum, different story.
Sure,
it
was.
Big ballpark.
Yeah.
It's a different story.
So, yeah, and that's a good example of a major effect on a team.
Oh, yeah.
So part of it is obviously tailoring the team to the ballpark,
that's
too.
Right. Yeah, well, you remember Pittsburgh and Hank Greenberg, or Kiner, what they call it, Hank Greenberg.
Greenberg's Gardens or something they call it.
Greenberg's Gardens out there, they pulled it in so he could hit a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's very important.
You know, the you were also a pioneer, semi-pioneer in a way that you played 1 year in St. Louis and then off to Baltimore.
Right.
What was that like? I know you pitched the opening game.
Sure
you
did.
Won it.
Right, 3-1.
Full house.
Beat Virgil Trout.
Yeah. What was that whole thing like with the fans with the...
It was so, there's no way I could tell you, it was really exciting because here we come from St. Louis. I mean, I remember we played a game against the Harlem Globetrotters.
Right?
It was
second
and third for the basketball game. And there must have been 15,000 people in the stands. And they could stay and see our game after that. We must have had 3,000.
Oh,
that was
my.
They all left.
Yeah.
So to sit there and you never had any fans, and even on July the 4th, we can never get over 10,000 people.
Wow.
You know, and to go from a club like a town like that to go to another town where, my gosh, they give, I won a Cadillac that year as the most valuable player, and I won a trip to Japan.
Oh, my goodness.
A lot of prizes, a lot of enthusiasm,
yeah.
a lot of people come to the games and everything, and you were heroes in town. Everybody knew you. So it was really exciting. It was like the World Series all the time. Now, well, I don't know what we drew, maybe a million and a half or something.
Yeah.
Nothing in comparison to what you drew out of Dave. But it was very exciting. Now, we weren't no different. We were the same damn team.
Yeah.
We just changed uniforms. But the fans didn't know that. We were their Orioles, you know.
And now, did that change things in a clubhouse and things like that? It's got to affect you somehow.
You know, it affected you a lot, but still, if they don't have a good team.
Yeah, doesn't improve your talent at all.
Nellie Fox told Casey Stinger one day, because Casey was hollering, he says, and down at Holland, says, hell, you ought to win, you got the horses, you know.
That's
true.
Yeah. Now, what was Memorial Stadium like?
Memorial Stadium was a pitcher stadium, a lot of foul territory.
Yeah.
Lines were short. But big out in center, big in right center, you power.
Mm-hmm.
I think that my first year there, I don't know, I pitched close to three. I might have pitched 300 innings. I don't remember.
Well, I can tell you.
I know I only give up 7 home runs.
You, 247 innings.
Okay. And I give up 7 home runs.
Yeah, that's.
See, that goes back to the theory of the concept. You know, you're playing in a big ballpark, they're not going to beat you with home runs. Plus, you're going to have. Keep the averages down because the so far.
So then, when you go to Fenway, what kind of now you have to pitch different.
Yeah, pitch a lot different in there. But I love Fenway. I just love to pitch there.
Why was that?
Two ballparks I love to pitch in: Detroit and Fenway. Mm. And the reason for it is because home plate was right against the backstop.
Oh, okay.
And when you're on the mound and you're looking at the batter, you feel like you're on right on top of it. Now you get in the Yankee Stadium, you get in the other stadium, there's so much room back there, it's like they're standing out in the field and you get no depth perception.
Yeah.
But in those ballparks, my God, when you throw the ball, you think you're throwing 300 miles an hour. And it was, I love to pitch in Fenway and I love to pitch in Detroit. That was my two favorite ballparks.
Yeah. Which were your least favorite ballparks?
Well, Cleveland, I think I won one game my whole career in Cleveland, and it was the last game I ever pitched there. I pitched some of my best ball games there, but I just couldn't seem to win.
Huh.
It was another big ballpark.
Yeah.
But I didn't fear really any ballpark. It didn't make no difference.
But you do have to make some adjustments depending on the...
Yeah, where you're playing. You got to pitch accordingly. Like people say in Boston, you want to pitch them away. I'm not going to pitch nobody away in Boston. I pitch you around your hands. Because if you get around fat on it, then you're going to hit it foul. And so I break your bats and everything else. I pitch you inside.
Yeah.
And a lot of the guys pitch outside and you get killed because you can hit them out anywhere in that ballpark. Except, dead center is kind of tough.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the home runs that beat you in Boston. It was the line drives. It hit the fence or little fly balls that hit the fence.
It would have been outs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I don't think, and I've been hooked on baseball since 1945, uh-huh. So I've seen lots of games. But I don't think, even guys like me know what a head game you guys play out there.
Yeah. Well, it's you really do. You pitch some guys. There's some ball players that you could pitch against that didn't know what the hell we're doing. They just went up and hit the ball.
Yeah.
The old saying, literally, get a good pitch and hit it. But there were a lot of guys that never were thinking along. And I say that from my point of view. I can't get inside a hitter's head.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a lot of hitters. I pitched the same way of my whole career, and they never got a hit off of me.
Mm-hmm.
Never knew how I was pitching.
Figured you out.
No, never figured out,
So it's, I used to think you got a good arm, you'd be a good pitcher, but it's this thing, too.
That's right.
I don't care
how hard you throw. Hitters will get to you. They can get the timing to pitch. Unless you're just a superstar, that's different. What makes a guy from Boston such a great pitcher is not that he throws so hard and not that he has a great curveball or a great slider, a great changeup. It's the fact that he has great control.
Okay.
He has a Maddox style of control with the ability of your superstar pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he has.
Now, that was always a challenge for you. In fact, two statistics you never saw. I'll give you the better one first.
The walks, the strikeouts, yeah.
Well, that's what this is. Of all the guys who have ever pitched in baseball, in the whole history of the game, I want to give you. And you take a look at the hits given per nine innings.
Yeah, I know
that. Do you know that? Yeah. 12th in all time?
Yeah, I used to be six for many years.
But then Randy Johnson and those guys come along.
Some guys come along, so it's up. It used to, 6.7 or something?
It was something like that, really low.
Yeah, that used to be for a long time. I was six in the big league.
Yeah.
Well, another thing, I remember when I would go into...
I thought I had you on that one.
No, I remember the good things. But I remember going in to talk to Weiss, and I always knew what they were going to talk about, so many base on balls.
Right.
And I said, well, Mr. Weiss, I thought the object was to win. I said, I win games? She said, yeah, you did, but you walked too many. I said, okay, how many hits I give up, Mr. White? And I did kind of stop me. I said, okay, I want to do one thing right now. I think men on base is really what you want to look at. But if you take my walks and you take my hits and add them together and tell me who you think is the best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah.
He said, Bob Lemon. I knew he was going to come back. But Bob won 25 games. I said, okay. Now add them together. I was 35 less people on base than he was.
Well, that what impressed is even the traditional baseball guys. Like George Weiss still kind of had a look at the game that was your objective is to minimize the other team from scoring.
That's right.
And that's what you get paid. If you walked 15 a game and didn't allow any hits, I might be exaggerating a little bit.
Well, it's like the style of pitching today. Okay, you've got middle relievers, short relievers. You got three guys. A guy comes in, puts out the fire. Another guy's middle reliever. Come on, and I looked at that. I says, pitching is so easy if there's nobody on base. The test of a pitcher is what happens when you get people on base.
Yeah.
I was good with people on base, real good. In fact, that's why I did relief in with New York. You'll see me. I started in relief in everything.
Yeah.
I didn't walk people when I relieved.
I think you had 12 saves or something like that in your.
I didn't walk people when I relieved. I walked people when I started.
Now, what was the difference in those two situations, Bob?
Well, when you come in a situation like that, your adrenaline gets flowing, you get men on base, and you got to reach back and get it.
Okay.
When I would walk people, it was not, I might have walked somebody in, I don't know, I don't remember that. But when you're in that situation, the good pitchers get better. They call the old expression, blow your neck, you know. They get better when they got men on base. You have to, because that's when you really got to bear down and get out of the situation.
Yeah, with nobody on, you don't have to.
No.
But with men on base, you have to.
That's right.
And that's one of the men boys things.
Yeah. That's right. Those, some of those guys that are good reliefers, they'd also be good starters, too.
Mm-hmm.
They get good ability. And they just take one pitch now because they're in it for a short period of time.
Yeah.
And master one pitch, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess they're raised from that from boys on almost to be a closer or what have you. You know, one of the other things that when I read the Roger Kahn's book, Boys of Summer, one line in there really struck me. He said, this isn't a book about baseball players. He said, it's a book about men who played baseball for a living.
Right.
And that kind of put a whole, because we fans see you guys as baseball players.
Yeah.
And that's all. And the guys I've interviewed, and I've interviewed a guy named Elmer Sexhauer, who lives in Cape Coral. You never heard of Elmer because he pitched to four guys in his whole major league career. Played with Jackie. He walked Johnny Mize with the bases loaded, and then he got a bad arm.
Yeah.
And so, but regardless, every time this is difficult, challenging for families.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were you married during this whole time? And you've got six children now.
Yeah.
I understand.
Well, I've been married three times, divorced twice. Wife I've been married to now, Carolyn. We've been married 21 years.
Now, what? That career you chose has got to have an effect then.
Well, tremendously.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's the times you're away from your family on the road and everything.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's nice is your family get to come see your work.
You get to see your work.
But it's doubt. You know, it creates doubts because you're on the road and the wives read the newspapers and the guys are out messing around. What are you doing, you know? And I'd be doing nothing.
Were you with Billy and Mickey?
No, I was not in that style. That was not my style.
That was a whole,
That's a whole different group of guys. But, you know, it's like whatever they did, it didn't affect their baseball.
Yeah.
Because when they came on the field, they played baseball.
Yeah.
And you had other guys that, you know, just even, they were just, like what Casey said one time, they're drinking milk, and this guy drinking scotch, but the guy, said a lot of expressions, but one of those is, guys out here drinking, I'm getting better, you're drinking milk, this guy's out here drinking, I'm getting better pictures of drunks, you know? Things like that, he would come with something like that. It's hard because you're gone for a certain period of time. Those days, we would have 18-day road trips.
Oh my,
You weren't flying, most planes were you in training.
Yeah.
And the baseball is a different system then because every Monday we was off, majority Thursday was off, and doubleheaders on Sunday.
Okay.
And so that's...